Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Graham Fenton from Wrexham Cans. How are you, Graham?
Very well, thank you.
Almost
pleased to be
you
here.
Excellent. We're going to be talking a wee bit about wine going into aluminium cans. Is it aluminium cans that you're proposing wine goes into?
Yes, it is. We're a can manufacturer and have can locations throughout the world. We make aluminium cans and steel cans, but wine is best suited for aluminium cans.
Okay. And just a bit about yourself, Graham. Are you a bit of a wine drinker?
I am a wine drinker. I like the wines that I like. I'm not a huge expert as such, but I have the favourite tipple.
What's that?
There's too many to name here, but I like all of the good wines.
I like all the good ones. Yeah, that's a fair comment. Okay. Wrexham Cans. How big are Wrexham Cans?
Wrexham is the largest two-piece can manufacturer in the world, and we have locations throughout the world in North America, South America, India, Europe, Russia, and other locations where there is packaging.
What's a two-piece can compared to what other type of can?
A two-piece can is a can that has no side seam. So you have the basic can without the end on, and then that is a container that is filled by the producer, and then the top, which we call an end, is then seamed on hermetically. So the whole product is sealed, and there's no weak point in the can at all.
I remember the old steel cans that had a seam down the side.
That's right.
And did it have a base as well, probably?
Yes, so they're called three-piece, because you have the body and two ends.
Okay, so you form a cylindrical, do you, and then you form a cylindrical as a single piece with an end
for three-piece, are you talking?
For a two-piece.
For two-piece, the basic can-forming mechanism is we have a flat sheet of metal. From that, we stamp out what we call a cup, which is like a shallow dish. The shallow dish then goes into a horizontal press that draws and wall irons the cup so that it gradually elongates the sidewalls. And then the final process is the spraying, printing, and then we put a flange on it, which means when the top goes on and it goes through the seamer, you get a nice seam, which forms the absolute seal for the product.
Oh, cool. Quick description of how to make a can.
Yeah, very quick.
Yeah, no, very good. Very good. I've done quite a bit with glass manufacturing, and if we find that wine cans become a huge thing, I might come and visit a factory.
Absolutely, you're always welcome.
Excellent. Why did you decide to maybe look at putting wine into cans? You've got a few products in cans already. We even saw some Prosecco that went into a gold can a few years ago, but what was the reasoning behind deciding to put a wine into a can?
Well, the can industry has always been perhaps accused wrongly, in my view, of not being particularly novel in its approaches. We're always looking for new markets. We saw that there was an interest for wine in cans, and we thought that it was an area that the wine industry had never really exploited. We think there's a real opportunity there for the wine industry to appeal to a wider section with a different channel than traditionally they would have done. So we thought we would test the waters and see how interested people were.
And the interest was?
And the interest was there immediately. We got some people taking it up. And I think the interest for us is then how can we get some of the better known wine brands interested in putting wine in cans and understanding that there is other opportunities for their marketing to tap into novel niche brands which may appeal to a younger age drinker than they currently have.
I can see some advantages with cans, but from your opinion, what are the key markets that you think a can is most suited for and why?
Well, I think there's quite a few markets that would be quite interesting to understand the potential for. We've done Vox Pops, looking at what people's interest is and how they think of the can. First of all, we think it appeals to a young age range between 18 and 36. That's where we take the can out and approach people without rehearsal, as it were, to give it to them and then find out what they think about the product. So you get an instant reaction about, do they think that's good? Will it appeal to them? How would they see people using it? You can ask a number of questions, but it's literally doing it on the hoof, going up to people and asking them their opinions on that product.
Okay.
The market, you know, we think 18 to 36-year-olds would be very interested in cans in a market. They already use cans a lot with all the products that are out there, all the energy drinks, you know, the standard products that are out there. So there's a really good opportunity for that. And then in terms of events, you know, there's picnics. Would people want a different wine each? And if so, then the can would make a good portion. You could have three cans, one white, one red, one rosé if you wanted. You know, you can mix and match.
Okay. I'm a wee bit of a traditionalist. I like to think of myself as an innovator, but back there I like to drink wine out of a glass. But one of the things with cans is it does have the advantage that if you're at a summer picnic or, you know, a big concert or something like that where you're not allowed glass in,
yep,
then a can obviously has huge advantages over glass because you're not allowed it. So I better have my wine some way than not at all. But then you're competing with PETs as well. So, you know, polyethylene, PET.
Tetrathalate.
Yeah. What is it? Polyethylene?
Tetrathalate.
Tetrathalate. So do you see PET as a natural competitor to you, or do bottles as a competitor?
It is a competitor. But again, we think the can has got advantages that will allow it to hold its own in some of the markets. It fills very fast, so it has good economy of space on the shelf. It's light, so it's good economies of transport. It chills very quickly. It feels cold when you hold it, so you immediately know you've got a cold can of wine. But again, we're not suggesting that people would necessarily drink it straight from the can. I think it's equally good. You know, you take the container along and you would still have your glass, pour it into the glass and enjoy it.
As a slightly traditionalist, I would never drink wine out of a can.
No.
But I'm quite happy pour it into a glass and drink it from a can. Yeah. Would that be the way you're looking to position
it? Yes, absolutely. I think part of the appreciation of wine, I mean, the can would be perfect because it's the perfect advertising medium. We print all the way around the can. We can print in six colours. So the medium is there for the brand. But of course, when one has a wine glass, you like to see the colour. You like to get the aroma. And the enjoyment is sipping it from the glass. So we're not pretending you drink it straight out of the can and do away with that.
Oh, good. I'd be a bit worried about that. Okay. In terms of performance, let's compare it to, say, PET, and then we'll compare it to glass and bottle as well. PET, you mentioned a load of different stuff, but yes, specifically, what is its key advantage over PET in your...
Well, the advantages for cans, as we see it, is the can is impermeable to oxygen or any other gases for that matter. So when the wine is put in the can, what's in the can stays in the can. There is no migration through the metal of anything. It keeps out any form of light and any form of UV rays. So it is the perfect product for preserving what's in the can. So it does a good job of making sure that the product is well protected.
It's almost the opposite of PET, where particularly in the small formats, and I've seen your cans, they're quite small, sort of almost a glass of wine type format. Small bottles of PET let a lot of oxygen in for the wine that they're trying to preserve, so they've got a very short shelf life. Whereas you're saying the aluminium can doesn't let any oxygen in at all.
No.
From a shelf life point of view, you've possibly got a longer shelf life.
Yes, I mean, we would offer, we do standard testing when we deal with new products just to make sure that the product's going to behave the way we expect it to in the can. And normally we would be offering a 12-month shelf life for the product.
Okay.
It would clearly stand longer than that, but we have to put a limit somewhere. So traditionally we put 12 months on something.
Do you
like
need
that
to put a best before date? Because on wine bottles you don't.
No, I think with the can we would want to, simply because it's something that I think we wouldn't necessarily be able to store it forever, and we don't know how that would react over time. And the can we are really marketing as more of a short-term, ready-to-drink type product with a shorter shelf life, and to get the turnover in the type of markets we're talking about.
Sure.
So we wouldn't be laying down good wines and putting them in the cellar in cans.
Okay. What about versus glass then, in a normal glass with a cork or a screw cap there?
Well, the can offers very good light packaging, so it has advantages in terms of the transport. There's less, a better carbon footprint in for the transport, less energy needed because it's lighter. It also has very good cubic efficiency on the shelf, so that you can get a lot of cans in a small cubic area, which means your rate per shelf sale is very, very good.
That's because they're quite narrow cans, aren't they? Yes. Whereas if they're big round cans, you'd have quite a lot of void space between the products.
Yeah, and they're almost cubic, so that there's no space that's left over because there's no long neck on the can. So it's very compact.
Oh, okay. Yeah, true. True. I suppose it's a shopper's, Tesco's dream product, really, isn't it?
Well, they like good cubic efficiency, and they do measure that sort of thing against the rate of sales. So it is one of their measures.
Sure. Okay. Let's talk a wee bit about how the can's made up. You said it was almost like an extruded single-piece can with another bit bolted on the top, two pieces, you described it. But it's just not aluminium, is it? There's lots of coatings and all that. Yep. What are the coatings that you use?
Well, the main coating that's of interest is the epoxy-based spray-on lining that we use, which is a standard lining that's used throughout the can industry. We apply more of it to protect the can than we would do some of the other products that we make. But it protects the wine from the can and makes sure that we have what goes in comes out of the can. So it's very important in terms of the overall performance and gives the 12-month shelf life that we have.
What about things like dinting the can? I remember reading years ago that things like aluminium was related to Alzheimer's and things like that.
It's certainly not true. I mean, there have been reports linking to it, but the latest research on that doesn't show a link to that. It's still
who funded the research?
No, that's nothing. The can industry has had nothing to do with any of the funding on that.
Or the aluminium industry.
No, I mean, they've been involved because there are discussions going on. But that is not a point that we consider to be of relevance these days. It has largely been discredited.
Has it? Okay.
And when you think of the number of people using aluminium pots and pans for ordinary cooking,
and also
the amount of aluminium that you get in a lot of natural foods anyway, it's far in exceeds what there is from the can. And we monitor very carefully the metal pickup as part of the normal process of quality that we have within the product.
If the cans get dinted, does that compromise the can at all?
It depends on the size of the dent. If it's really bashed, then it could do. But the lacquers that we use are flexible, so they're made for can formation. We actually bend some of the can during manufacture after it's been sprayed anyway. So they are flexible. So through normal handling, there are no problems.
Okay. And in terms of the format size, you talked about them being quite square and cubic and all that sort of stuff for space efficiency, but they seem the ones I've seen are like a single shot. You know, there's enough for me, no one else. Not that I'm greedy. Mind you, I do say that about a 750ml bottle as well. But but the cans, how many mils in one of your cans at the moment that you're looking?
Well, we have been making 250ml cans. That's the standard sort of energy drink size. And people have been using that for wine, putting 250ml in. Some people have used a 200ml and then put 187ml in, which is like a glass and a half. We make 13 different sizes across the group, right from a 1 litre down to the 200ml can. So we really, if there's a market for it, we'll look at manufacturing what the market would like. So we're quite flexible. But it tends to be around those sizes. And there is some legislation in different areas which limits what sort of serving sizes you can put in the can for wine.
Yeah, 250ml, 175, 125.
Yeah.
Sort of standard sizes. And in the EU.
The EU. And then America has even different sizes. So there's a different set of rules governing that.
Is that why you see strange numbers like 440 mils in cans of Pepsi?
Well, the 440 mils, I think, is a hang back from the beer industry where they used a 16-ounce can. And it goes back to the imperial days and the imperial measurements why they chose those particular things. And it's just buried in the history of how the industry's grown up.
What wines have you got in can at the moment, or have you produced for producers? I saw the Prosecco in can with Paris Hilton, which was probably...
Yeah, the Prosecco has been very popular. People have been using them for spritzers and also fruit-based mixed wine drinks. Those have been very popular.
Coolers.
Yeah, the cooler type drinks. We have other French style wines that are looking at being put in the can and have been. So we have a number of different people that are interested and are using it. So throughout Europe, the numbers of wine cans that we have been selling have been growing year on year.
Do you think that any particular white or red or sparkling wine or anything like that might be more suited to a can, or do you think it's too early to tell?
Well, the can is seen, I think, generally by people as being a container that chills well and is used to be coming out from the fridge. So I suspect that people will readily take to a sparkling wine or a white wine or indeed a rosé wine. Red might be a bit more of a challenge. We can put red in the can. We have put red in the can, and that's not an issue. But maybe the people would have a little bit more resistance about just having it from out of the can. But all of them are readily available, and we have the technology to can both sparkling and the still wines.
I suppose the two areas I mentioned, we mentioned fairs and concerts and things like that. The other place where this might have a advantage over other bottle sizes is airplanes.
Yes.
Airplanes with because they're quite weight focused, aren't they?
They're very weight focused, and that is another opportunity. And we've been speaking to the people who supply the airline trade because that's the way into that. It's not actually easy to get the airline trade to do that themselves. They rely on their suppliers and the contracts they have as to how they get those wines. But that's certainly an area that would be very interesting, and the can's perfect for that.
How does a can compare to a glass bottle from a recycling point of view?
From a recycling point of view, the can is excellent. It is totally recyclable. So if you put a can in for recycling, it will come back as a can, closed loop. You save energy because we don't have the initial smelting energy, because all you've got to do is remelt it and it comes back as a can. And indeed, where there are closed recycling loops, after you dispose of the can, 60 days later it can come back as the can again. So it really is a fast loop. The aluminium itself has value, so there is an incentive for people to recycle. People can collect it, take it along to the local scrap merchants, and they will actually get a value for the aluminium.
Oh, so, really? Okay, and in terms of, like, let's look at the numbers, though. Energy-wise, per 250 mils served, do you know how that compares to a glass bottle?
I think one needs to be very careful, because there are lots of different studies, and they all start from different perspectives. But our view is that the aluminium bottle would compete more favourably than glass, and is a very environmentally friendly container.
I suppose if it is closed loop, it doesn't matter if it's going, like, one of the problems with glass is a lot of wine is in green glass, which doesn't have any other use apart from green glass bottles, which is for wine. And places like the UK, where we don't actually consume a lot of green glass, now we use it and then we try to recycle it, but it can't be consumed or reused. Mm-hmm. It's not really closed loop, whereas it doesn't matter if it's a beer can or a wine can, does it? It can go into a beer bottle or another wine can.
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't matter. It's an aluminium can, and the aluminium can be used for whatever market. We're not really saying either that the can should replace the glass bottle. The glass bottle has its place. What we're saying is that by not the wine industry not taking on board an aluminium can, that perhaps they're missing an opportunity for a wider spread of their product through different channels that they don't currently have. So they're just simply missing opportunities by not including the aluminium can within their portfolio.
Okay, then. I think we'll wrap it up there, Graham.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.